first time I went down to Newcastle here, down by the riverside it was, and I went with a friend of mine who had left Usher at the same time as me, a chap called MacDonald, and I persuaded him to go with me, and we went down, and I signed on as a regular, and we had a sort of a quick medical at the time, and they accepted me, but they didn't accept the other chap, much to his joy, and I've never seen him since, actually. But they accepted me, and then when I went for the full recruiting, of the full medical before joining, they failed me, because I have an arm which failed, I can't sleep.
Yeah, we got all that.
Yes.
That we did get, right. So we can go on now from where we left off. We were talking about the conditions on joining the camp at
Brantford. Yeah.
And the last thing we talked about, we started to talk about, was the food. We talked about breakfast. What kind of food were you getting for dinner? Because this is the height of rationing, isn't it?
Yes, it was. No, the food was very good. Dinner being midday meal, I mean. Yes. Breakfast was very substantial. I mean, it was usually bacon and something with it, and fried bread. And that. Well, I mean, we were well fed. There was no doubt about that, which we had to be because we were putting in a lot of spending a lot of energy on the training. I can't remember what the menus were like, either for breakfast, midday meal, or evening meal. But one dish I always remember, and I will forget, is a cheese pie, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and everybody else. Tested, so I used to go down and eat their rations, you know, until I had enough. But there was no doubt about it, the food, as I recollect it, was very substantial and very presentable. You know, it was, you went in a queue, you know, and you got dolloped plate on your plate, but it was good. I had no complaints about it. The only thing I remember about it, I say, is the cheese pie.
Working day would end, and what meal did you get at the end of that time?
At the end of the day was the evening, sort of supper. I can't even remember the time of it. And we couldn't really spend a lot of money at the Maffey because we didn't have much to spend anyway, and I used to make a voluntary allotment at home, which was half of what I got pay. So the meals that we got all through the day had to suffice. Each day, very occasionally, if I had a penny or two spare, I would buy a pie and a napkin or something. You know, but that I can't again remember what time the meal was in the evening. I think it was somewhere around about 6 o'clock.
And was that just a light meal?
A lightish meal, yes.
What was your pay on joining? What was your pay on joining?
21 shillings a week, I think it was. Yes.
Gone up from the early days?
It's a little bit, oh yes. As I say, I used to make a 10 shilling voluntary allotment home to my mother, and she used to give it back to me when I wanted it. So I really only had 11 shillings a week to spend, plus whatever she saved up, given back. But it was surprising how long it went. I wasn't a very great smoker. I smoked a little in those days, but not a great deal. So what money I did spend was more on sweets and chocolates, maybe, you know, a Maffey pie or sandwich. Sandwiches were pretty dreadful.
Could you take me through a typical day in your basic training, from getting up and going right through the day?
Well, again, my memories are a little vague, but I'll do my best. First of all, I think, if I remember rightly, Ravalli was about 6. We got up. We were marched to the wash place, washed, shaved, came back. That would be about 6:30 in the morning. And then we would be taken from there, we'd get our messages and march to the to the dining hall, getting there around about between 6:45 and 7:00, where we would have breakfast. Then we'd go back and we would have to put our kit out and be medically inspected. The room inspection and the kit inspection, and then we would do the training from about 9 o'clock until 1, I think it was, in the afternoon, and we'd stop and then again be marked. finish about 2 o'clock, well, an hour ago, and then we would go on with the training again until about 4, and then we would then have a bit of free time, sit about back and chat as well, and then around about 5:30 to 6 o'clock we would be marched to the cookhouse again, or the dining room again, and have the evening meal, and after that we were free for the rest of the night, unless you were on guard duty, in which case you then went on parade with your kit and hoped that you got stick man. If you got stick man, then you were excused doing the duty, but you were on reserve and called on call. You had to stay in uniform, but you'd go out and napping and that sort of thing. And lights out were around about 10:30.
In the morning session, was that drills on the square?
Well, it depended on what stage you were at. Yes, initially it was drills, both marching and static drill and weapon training. We had to reach certain standards, which was tests of elementary training on weapons. This was only for about 6 weeks initially. And then on odd occasions we would be marched to Stanley and throw grenades. Another occasion we would be marched or taken to a training area at Walbridge, where we would do practice platoon attacks. And very occasionally we'd go out to the moors up at Otterburn and do live training with live ammunition.
The initial drills, were you immediately expected to do this at light infantry pace, or did they build?
Oh yes.
With no build up, straight into the pace.
Wait a minute now. I think the first 6 weeks we just did ordinary heavy infantry drill, and then after that we then went into a regimental drill, which was the light infantry drill, and we finished up. That was about a 10-week spell, that one, and we finished up finally with a 20-mile route march, full kit. And then when we arrived back, we had to do about 20-minute drill. At light infantry pace, just to show that we could do these things. And the time that this, I didn't actually do that when I first joined, because during some regimental sports, I did the long jump and I tore the cartilage in my left knee, and eventually finished up in the sort of medical system. Really, I was operated on in the general here. And then the system, if you were wounded or in hospital, was you went from there to a convalescent home. And the one I went to was at Callaly Castle in Northumberland. And after about, I think I was there for about 8 or 9 weeks. From there, I went to a convalescent depot, which was down in Scarborough, for about another 10 weeks or so. And eventually, I got back to my unit, so I was away for something like 3-4 months, which held me right back, you know. So that by the time I was doing the final piece of training, which culminated in the route march, D-Day had started, you could see all the stuff while we were marching, you know, you see all the stuff making its way down to the A1M at 8 and Bank. Was just a section at that time up to Washington, and it was crammed with transport vehicles waiting to take people, you know, to be used on the continent.
Weapon drill, what form did that take?
Well, you had rifle, LMG, Bren, and the Sten gun. How to use it.
And what kind of weapons were they? What were they like?
Well, a Sten gun was subject to stoppages frequently. It was a very primitive weapon, actually. You know, it was not entirely foolproof, but it was so simple and cheap to make that they continued using it. The rifle was a 303, that was the bolt action. The Bren gun was always very good. Very few stoppages on the Bren gun, and they were usually due to the fact that the magazine was empty, and he went through the drill of changing magazines.
Route marches, were those gradually built up in distance?
Yes, they were there was a PE training, I think, or it was physical endurance training, yes. We started off just without an PE kit, and then they build up. They started off, say, a 5 mile walk, and then a 5 mile run, and then you would gradually build that the distance up in PE kit. Then you would just go do it in uniform without any equipment, and then you finished up with full equipment, pack, pouches, rifle, and you do a 20 mile route march, which was a part of the test for passing out, and then you had a passing out parade eventually. I spent something like 15 months at Bransworth.
And that business of marching, what happened if someone dropped out for any reason? How were they picked up or looked after?
Oh, well, there was usually a vehicle following behind, and if anybody really was badly put out, then they would take and they would be failed. They would either be transferred into a non-infantry unit, or they would be made to do the whole thing again until they could do it, unless there was a medical reason for not doing it. And as I say, by the time I went into the army, they were beginning to scrape the bottom of the barrel as far as fit people were concerned. I mean, one of the blokes that joined with me at Durham, he had a club foot. I think I told you that last time. And they said, you know, thank you very much for trying, but no chance. Not even in one of the services.
Did you have periodic rests during a march?
Yes, it was by the hour. You got 40 minutes marching, 10 minutes rest. 40 minutes, 10, 40 minutes, 10.
And at the end of it all, were your feet examined?
That was part of the drill. The officer always made, he went to the back of your barracks, boots were off, socks were off, and he had to sit on the bed so that the officer could come around and inspect your feet. And if you had blisters or anything like that, they were dealt with immediately by the MO.
Bayonet training, was that part of your course?
Yes.
And was that charging the sacks?
In our own guard, yes. Yes. Grenade throwing, bayonet training.
Gas precautions.
Gas drill. We often used to have gas drill while we were marching. You know, somebody would shout gas, and you had to put your gas mask on and carry on marching until somebody said all clear, and you took it off and carried on marching. You know. And we used to have things like ambush drill, reaction to ambushes, and laying an ambush. That was depot training, and then when you went on battalion training, you got the whole lot as a company sort of thing. And I went up to Chevy Chase up in Northumberland for that.
And you said they were drills, those?
What,
the ambush drill?
Oh, you did them as a drill. Your immediate reaction to having been caught in an ambush, you had to do.
It was to charge
wherever the thing came from, you know. That was the recognised drill. That was all you could do, unless you were carrying grenades, and then you'd probably we didn't always carry grenades, actually. But when I was in Korea, we had insisted on carrying grenades, and that was the immediate action, to throw a grenade from the direction of where the fire has come from. Yeah, it was very primitive, and it was gung-ho stuff.
Did you feel that the training was relevant to what was to follow?
Came so later on when you were actually doing these things under fire, but then again, you knew you weren't being fired at, it was just fire was going over your head. So it was as realistic as it could be in the circumstances. I mean, once you got into action, it was made it completely different. All we were trying to instill was reaction to whatever the situation was, that you had a drill which would deal with it. And that was an automatic reaction. So if something happened to your brain gun, you knew from what happened, whether it was the gas or whether it was an empty magazine or whatever, and you immediately did it. And the quicker you did that, the safer your life would be the real situation.
PT and sport, was that part of your
career? Yes, yes, that's a good, plenty of sport, yes. I used to play for the depot team, actually. In fact, quartermaster chap called Ozzie Pearson, who used to run a football team. And we were in one of the local leagues, which we played places like Bishop Auckland, Barnet Castle, and Bishop Auckland always had a very good reputation. And I think we won it one year. I got a medal for it, I know that. Although I wasn't playing, I played every game until the last one. I don't know why I didn't, but I was hurt or medically unfit or something, but they gave me a medal because I'd been playing all the other games. Athletics. Well, there were, of course, athletic tests. Things like running a mile. That was the climax of the tests. We used to run along the road down the side of Brasbus between the ATS camp and the main camp. It was just it was a mile, but as near as Dammit, I suppose it must have been. And I remember doing it in about 4.5 minutes, so it couldn't have been a full mile. Couldn't have been a full mile, and I was about 100 yards in front of anybody else, you know. But again, it was only because of the standard of people that were coming in. I mean, I was fit, but the others weren't particularly. And you had to do sort of physical tests. They were, you know, moving quoits from one raised stick to another, and moved them all around so that eventually finished up with them. It'd be from there to there, from there to there. And you had to get, it was a matter of coordination and how you dealt with the situation. Yeah. They were all part of the recruit selection procedure, really.
Did you feel that because of the abilities or lack of abilities of the people coming in at that stage of the war, that they watered down the training system a little bit?
No, they didn't water it down. No, they got exactly
the same.
Still have that demanding situation? Yes, They've just got, they accepted lower standards, I suppose. You know, I imagine that initially most people did under 5 minute miles there, but by the time I was in, there were only one or two who could do the under 5 minutes. But the others were all, provided they didn't collapse halfway down, you know, they were fast.
What duties did you have in that initial period in the depot?
None, I suppose, really, apart from going on guard.
And you mentioned that was, of course, to be smart enough to get the stick.
Yes, I got that very often.
Was there a great deal of rivalry between the various squads?
Yes. And also, we shared the depot with the Duke of Wellington Regiment, and there was a great deal of rivalry between them and us as well. That was when one was badged, after being badged. A lot of the people that came in, of course, some went to the Duke, some went to the DLI. There was never any doubt as to where I was going to go because my father had been in it, and half the people that were up at the depot knew me and knew my father, so you know, it was automatic that I would be going into the DLI. But I can't think, I was given an opportunity to command a section as a private, you know. But other than that, I can't recall any other particular duties. The usual, you know, I have to keep the hut clean. And I think I told you last time that the corporal at Latimer, his name was, he used to leave me in charge of the if he wanted to go out or do something, he'd tell me to look at and see that there was everything all right. You know. And it was surprising how they accepted me. Yes, yeah.
Life in the barrack room itself, was the gambling going on?
Oh yes.
What was the
answer? Coming straight from Russia, it was a culture shock. I mean, they were talking about women all the time for the start, you know. And the language was absolutely horrifying. I think I told you last time, I was telling them, for goodness sake, can you not think of something else to say? Let's accept the four-letter word the whole time. And they would calm it down. But the habit was there that they would find it very difficult to not produce the swear words as adjectives.
What was the Army's attitude towards gambling in the barrack rooms?
Well, generally speaking, they didn't mind it, provided that it wasn't excessive. You know, if somebody got into financial difficulties, then they would come heavy on it. But otherwise, they didn't. They turned a blind eye to Not that I experienced personally, and not that I saw anywhere in my barrack room, but I would imagine that there was a certain amount going on. But it's not. I never was conscious of the sort of bullying that you get, which appear to get these days. You know, people being going through initiation ceremonies and that sort of thing. There was none of that that I can recall.
Did Ryan, when you were with the Duke of Wellington, was that a healthy
Oh yes, yes. I mean, we were very proud of the fact. Made you very proud of the fact that you were better on infantry and that you were doing DLI drilling, quite all well, these, you know, this heavy infantry stuff that was very clod up us going down the square when we were hailing around like young gazelle, you know. Yes, there was. And also while I was there, the one of the battalions in France of the Dukes had fled from the scene of was battle, and they got back to the depot, and you know, I mean, they really did have a rough time from us because of that, and their members, the people that want to join them, they went down very, very rapidly. Everybody wanted to join the VLA, but it was unfortunate because it's a good regiment, and they did extremely well in Korea, the Dukes.
Local leave and short term leave.
My parents lived here in Newcastle, and they lived just down the road there, a place called Toolman's Gardens. And I used to get home, I used to come home here. That was all, I never met anywhere else.
You didn't get to meet the people in the immediate community or area around the camp. Did you get to meet those people?
The local people.
Wellington and so forth.
Not really, no. I met a couple of girls, yes, that I was growing up with, but they. As far as the sort of general run of people in Bannon Colliery or Meadowfield or anywhere like that, not really. I kept in touch with Ushaw. I was reminded the other day of a visit I paid up there in my private uniform wearing hobnail boots, clattering through the hallowed halls of Ushaw. Into the dining room, and you've got tiled floors, you know, and I'm cutting around. And it was remembered by a chap the other day. He said, I remember you coming. Other than that, no. They used to turn out for us when we were marching through the villages and this sort of thing and cheer us on, you know, but apart from the odd girlfriend, not really. I spent a lot of time down in Durham, which everybody did. We used to come down to Durham to. For an evening out, the weekend. And there was a train back from Durham.
Have you any memories of the officers that were in charge of you during your basic training?
One or two, I can't remember the names, but there was one chap who took us for unarmed combat, and he was sort of blood and thunder chap. There was another. I think it was the same chap actually used to take us for. Current affairs talks, and I always used to enjoy those because I take the trouble to get myself up to date, and I always had plenty to say. And they used to say, "Go on, let's get on with it." CO Hubert McBain, I remember him, although very seldom saw him, but I remember him largely because he was a friend of the family, you know, and he was the one that told me when my father died. Sent me home on compassionate leave. There was one of the company commanders who had been over to France with 6 TLI and came back wounded. And I always considered it. He made me a company clerk and gave me a strike. I said, you know, it's really worth doing because I'm going to Worsley shortly. He said, yeah, come on, get on with it. And he gave me a strike as well. He gave me a little bit more extra money, you know.
And you can't remember his name?
I can't remember any of it. Apart from, there was a chap called Reevely. He was one of the company commanders who was a friend of my father's. He was one of the ones that was instrumental in getting me from Glasgow into Bransworth. Ozzie Pearson was the quartermaster. I can't.
What were they like?
Officers having a clue, really. They never bothered us, really. You know, they seemed to be all right. We used to salute them whenever they passed them. practicing being, up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down, you know, and get a bit annoyed if they didn't return it properly. But other than that, but no, I couldn't really, they didn't impinge on my consciousness very much.
The instructors, you mentioned one or two by name,
yeah.
What were they like as people?
Generally speaking, they were very enthusiastic and very good at their jobs. Bill Nicholson was one of the PE. Are you talking about PE instructors or just instructors generally? Yeah, there was another one I particularly fond of, a chap called Fitzgerald. He was my platoon sergeant when I was first recruited. When I went in first, but prior to being actually called up. And then I stayed in that same hut, and I had him for about 12 weeks, something like that. And I admired him. He was he had a bad foot. I think he'd been wounded or something. But he was a fine man, you know. And I was just up Latimer, who used to live somewhere down there. I used to meet him on several occasions after the war when he had been released. Instructor Nicholson was, and then there was another chap called Lee, who was an amateur boxer. No, he was a professional boxer. And we had to do that. We're expected to go and box. And we also do the milling, you know, stand toe to toe and just punch. I broke my thumb, actually. And one particular, it was really, he's my company commander. He said, "Box, you know, go on, have a go." So I had a go, and that's good. That's good. I had no clue what I was doing with it. And he said, "Right, now then, we have the big contest now, and you have to fight your way up. And then if you win the final thing, you get a pot." So I got as far as the semi-finals, I think it was. And in the semi-finals, I swung at a bloke, something like that, and I broke my thumb. And I had to go to Dry Burn, and there's in a record somewhere. And he wanted me to fight the final, because I'd won that bout as it happened, you know. And I said, "Well, it hurts, you know." He said, "Never mind." He said, "Just go in and fight." He said, "You'll find it. It will be a credit to you, you know." So I went in, and this was the first time I tried to hit the bloke. And I had to stop. He got in, and he said, "This young man," and he gave me the full bottle, you know, about what a wonderful bloke I was, for being brave enough to get in, knowing that I had a broken thumb in this. I could see what he meant now, when he said it wouldn't do me any harm. Shortly after that, once it was cured, I went to Wasby.
Were there any bullies amongst the NCOs?
Bullies? I was never bullied. I can't recall. They used to. You know, swear at you and that sort of thing, but it was just part of the system. the swearing was just part of the scene anyway, you know, and it sounded good to anybody who happened to be listening to this, whatever was happening. But generally speaking, I found that they were very good and very helpful.
It would be pretty strict discipline at the beginning.
Oh, yes.
What kind of activity would be frowned upon as indiscipline?
Well, absence without leave was one.
Was there a lot of that at that time?
Not a lot, no. They were very good from the point of view of compassionate leave. You know, as soon as they knew that there was some problem, they used to try and sort it out. Insolence, dumb insolence, and of course, conduct or prejudice. You never really knew as a recruit. You know what prejudice you will, or what conduct was prejudicial to military discipline until you found yourself on a charge. Malingering as well—that was another thing they used to come a heavy on. It was very difficult to convince them that you were. They generally seemed to believe me if I said I wasn't very well. But the other blokes they used to regard with some suspicion. They had to prove that they were nearly dead before they would be believed. But again, I'm not conscious of any severe ill discipline which they frowned upon. But you know, the NCOs needed their their status, and they came there if somebody was quite cheeky or not doing as he was ordered to do.